This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
These government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio, the radio show that is out here to tame the wild people. Anyways, welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. We got a lot of things going on here. We just had Dave Hodges on. We're going to have John Wadsworth on. He's going to be contributing to the whole story about we're in the midst of this revolution, more of a communist revolution. And, of course, all the different communists that are out there, right? Because we have many. Anyway, welcome to the show. Visit our website, a21r.com. And, of course, newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. Now, a lot of things. Where do you start? I mean, it's just they're going to defund the police? Well, again, this is only in places where you have Democratic mayors and cities for the most part. I mean, I know there's some exceptions out there. I get it. But here's their deal. They're all broke as a joke. In their mind, they're using this as some sort of lever for more money. That's really what it comes down to, because only socialists take money. They don't know how to make money. They go out and get it, have a job, or better yet, you know, create jobs so you can have jobs. I'm surrounded all the time by radio commercials that come out of Sacramento that are just absolutely hysterical to me. And they have all these job-seeking places. There, go get a job here. Get a job there. Get a job everywhere, right? Everywhere there's jobs to be had. Just go fill out an application. But in California, that's not the case. They have driven the jobs out of California because of the anti-job environment, anti-biz environment, especially small businesses. What they have done is they have literally stopped the ability for producers to make things, to do things as you would find in typical job environments in which the government is supporting, not trying to destroy, That's a key thing. So if you take away all the jobs, then how can you go look for a job when nobody's creating jobs? That's the biggest point I got. And this is something that people apparently just do not get. Well, the left doesn't get it. The right gets it. And, of course, that's why the stock market's recovering, because they know they got a friend in Donald Trump out there, which is a good thing, which is a good thing. Yep, Donald J. Trump. You know, this is kind of important, I think. Yeah, I'm looking at some of our stuff that's going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. The data people are data mining right now, which is a good thing. We have just tons of things to cover, though, and I want to get through this because we got to get to the good stuff here. I want to talk about Brett Baer and his interview with Bill Barr the other day. We're going to pull that one up because I think it's so salient as to what's going on with the things that need to be cleaned up and that the left does not want to have cleaned up. The communists don't want to. You can call them communists. You know, you have the Communist Party and the Democratic Party, right? And then you have those Republicans that have turned communists, right? Right. Tucker Carlson had a great comment about this. I'm going to play him. And got to be able to listen to him yesterday. It was kind of cool, actually. Here we go.
One in three deaths is caused by cardiovascular disease.
We had a very long
millions of patients are treated with statins.
Well, we have to wait for the so-called commercial that's involved with this. I hate it when this sort of thing happens. He warns that basically at the top of the show Tuesday that the left-wing activists are transforming America into a society fit their design, which discriminates against certain groups while styling itself as a movement against discrimination. That's very true. That's very, very true. And I don't think we can hide that much longer, actually. Can we now, communist? We can't hide the fact that you are actually communist out there. Right? I mean, this is the environment that we live in. Is we have, you know, communists amongst us, right? And guess what they want to try and do? They want to try and destroy us. Let's see if we can get the Carlson thing going on here. He's pointing this out in this part.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. We had a very long open yesterday. In fact, we spent almost half of last night's show telling you about the rise of left-wing mobs in this country and the threat they pose to all of us. We felt it was that important. We told you that no matter what they're claiming on television or how loudly they are claiming it, their main goal is power. It always is. In order to seize that power, they will do literally anything, whatever it takes. They'll silence you, they'll hurt you, they'll burn your country down, and they're doing all of that now. You're watching it. So the question is, how should you respond to this? And the answer is, with courage. You're an American. You live in a free country. You have nothing to be ashamed of. You don't have to apologize for crimes you did not commit. You have the absolute right to say exactly what you believe is true. That is your birthright. And now is the time to affirm that right out loud. When enough decent people rise from their knees and stand down the mob evaporates. These people are not warriors. They are vampires. They melt in the light. When we show them we are not afraid, they go away. That's what we told you last night. Minutes after we said that, the mob came for us. Irony of ironies. They spent the last 24 hours trying to force this show off the air for good. They won't succeed in that, thankfully. We work for one of the last brave companies in America, and they're not intimidated. We're grateful for that. But the whole thing did get us thinking that we should be more specific about who this mob is and what they're doing. Who are the people trying to take over your country, cancel your rights, eliminate our centuries-long tradition of tolerance? Yes, tolerance. And a free expression. And the truth is, we often don't know their names. They're mostly faceless political agitators who exist primarily online. They're trolls who thrive on cruelty. And yet suddenly they have immense power over all of us. Weak leaders now reflexively bow to their demands, no matter what those demands are. Why is that? What's changed? Well, that's a much longer conversation. We probably ought to do an entire show on that topic. And if the news ever calms down long enough to think in bigger terms, well, we will do that. But for now, it's enough to say that the country's defenses have been badly weakened by decades of relentless propaganda, all of it designed to make us feel that we have no right to stand up for ourselves, to stand up for our country. We are too sinful to resist. We deserve whatever we get. Shut up and take it, America. We could spend days showing you examples of this, but here's just the very latest. It's from CNN over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm not bringing this sign to the protest at the community center later.
upset.
Are the protesters sad?
They are sad and upset, and they have every right to be, Elmo. People are upset because racism is a huge problem in our country. Across the country, people of color, especially in the black community, are being treated unfairly because of how they look.
It's children's show. Got that, Bobby? America is a very bad place, and it's your fault. So no matter what happens, no matter what they do to you when you grow up, you have no right to complain. That's the message, and it starts very young. Where does it end up? Exactly, we're finding out. Here's where it ends up. Alexander Katai is a Serbian soccer player who, until the other day, played professionally for the Galaxy in Los Angeles. Last week, Katai's wife posted criticism online of the looters she was watching wreck Minneapolis. A lot of people felt that way. Katai's wife wrote in Serbian, which she speaks, and yet someone noticed them anyway and then attacked her for writing them. She deleted the post very quickly, but it was too late. Now, we should be clear that her husband, the soccer player, may not even have known that she wrote the post. His wife was in Chicago when she wrote them. He was practicing with his team in Los Angeles. But it didn't matter. Protesters dutifully arrived at the stadium to call for his firing. So the management of the LA Galaxy forced Katai to apologize for his wife and then to denounce her. Denounce his own wife. Then they made him endorse Black Lives Matter, which he did, and then they fired him anyway, and then they attacked him on his way out.
There you go. That's the way it is. We'll be back. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Protecting your phone conversations from snooping agencies, foreign governments, and those who would use your conversations to hurt you and your family is the most important action that you can take today. DEF, Defense Enabling Assisting Framework, protects all your conversations and text messages. Don't find your conversations on social media sites or in the storage bins with big governments around the world. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system. I've used the DEF system since 2014 and have been 100% protected. Go to A21R.com, that's A21R.com, and sign up for the DEF system today. That's A21R.com and sign up for the DEF system today. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 when you use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Agenda 21 Radio is brought to you by Aram Solar. Yes, if you want to make sure your house is powered and you want solar, go to Aram Solar. But also, because of the recent behavior of California, boy, how appropriate it is, we're talking about that right now. Shutting off power to 43 counties is not a fun thing. And by the way, it doesn't need to happen. But if it does happen, you need to be prepared. Get yourself a generator for your house. Aram Solar can do just that. It can provide electrical power at any time for any shortage that pops on. If your power pops off, they will pop on with a generator. All you need to do is give them a call at 866-676-5276. That's 866-676-5276. That's Aram Solar, the best solar you can get, but also the best generation you can get when your house runs out of energy. Don't let yourself be held hostage by the energy companies any longer. That's 866-676-5276, Aram Solar.
There are enough laws on the books by Congress that are very clear in terms of how we have to enforce our immigration system.
All aboard!
He's undoing the UN, one community at a time. It's Paul Preston.
And welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio. We're going to jump over now. We're going to be covering the police reform hearings in the U.S. House. Of course. And Jim Jordan is speaking right now, so I'm kind of anxious to see what he has to. Nadler. He had his few words, and of course, this is just like impeachment, right? It's not impeachment. And yes, I woke up this morning and Donald J. Trump was my president. Shocking, right? He's going to be our president when it comes November 4th as well. So here we go,
exploiting
Jim Jordan.
Tragedy to loot, rob, attack, and menace. Healing, not hatred, justice, not chaos, are the mission at hand. Well said, Mr. President. Healing, not hatred, justice, not chaos. That is our mission. The president is right, and I appreciate his leadership. This is the House Judiciary Committee. With its storied history of defending the Constitution and the rule of law, let's adopt that mission. Healing, not hatred, justice, not chaos. Let's work together to make America the great place to continue to make America the greatest nation ever. That I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. I now recognize the chair of the Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security, the gentlelady from California, Ms. Bass, for her opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you for your years of leadership on this issue. I know you've been involved for many years supporting police reform, and I want to thank you for convening this hearing today. What we saw in Minnesota, the slow, torturous murder of George Floyd by a uniformed officer, was an outrage and a tragedy. What we have seen since then, millions of Americans marching in the street to demand justice and call for reforms, it has been an inspiration. And minus a few days of violence, it has been peaceful, and it has been in the American tradition. And what we have here today is a hearing in the U.S. Congress to examine policing practices in America and paths to reform, and so we have an opportunity. What we have seen since then is an opportunity to rethink the nature of policing, an opportunity for meaningful accountability in policing, and it is an opportunity to show the nation and the world that we are listening and that we will act. Too often this debate is framed in terms of citizens versus the police, us versus them, but this is really about the kind of America we all want to see. We all want to be safe in our communities. We all want the police to come to our rescue when we're in trouble. We all want to support the brave men and women who put their lives on the line for us every day. And when we interact with police, we all want to be treated with respect, not suspicion. Nobody should be subjected to harassment or excessive force just because of the color of their skin, and no one should suffer the indignities of racial profiling or be on the end of a deadly chokehold. We should all want for ourselves and for our children and for our neighbors the same. On Monday, I introduced, along with Chairman Nadler and more than 200 members of Congress, H.R. 7120, the Justice and Policing Act. This bold, transformative legislation would help reimagine the culture of policing while holding accountable those officers who failed to uphold the ethic of serving and protecting their communities. I know later, when we do a markup, we will entertain an amendment to change the name of the legislation.
Now, we're going to come back to reality. And a lot of people don't want to listen. I don't want to listen, Karen Bass. It's a circus. It's going to be a circus. But, you know, it's going to be interesting when Dan Bongino is supposed to be here. So that ought to be really interesting to see Nadler, somebody like that, examine or cross-examine. No, this is not a court. But to question him. And he's going to lay down some statements, I suspect. But, yeah, a lot of people don't know who Karen Bass is. She's from California. She's an extremist. Extreme liberal communist. I think she's actually mentioned. I could be wrong, but I keep Trevor Loudon's book, The Enemies Within, all around me, all over the place. And as an example, they had he's got all these people that are listed here, they're all listed as communists. And in the Democratic, they're in the Democratic Party. They're listed as communists. I think what he needs to do is write a book about the Republicans who have communists within their ranks, yet communist socialists within their ranks. Wouldn't that be interesting? You might find something out about John McCain, or you know, something like that. I know we shouldn't. I guess we shouldn't be talking about that, right? No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Anyway, so she's still talking, and we're gonna go on with our business. And the couple of things that are going on, Brett Barr interviewed interviewed Barr to the other day, and A.G. Barr. It was interesting to listen to the interview. I'll play it. I'm trying to straddle. I think Bongino may be up next, so she's going to get her 5 minutes of fame here. And as she does, this Karen Bass, I'll be telling you a little bit about this interview with Bill Barr. So Barr goes after Barr, doesn't really go after him, but he's, you know, and Barr is very, very straightforward. He thinks absolutely that, and he didn't say it absolutely, I guess, but you can tell absolutely looking at him in his body language that in my impression, my opinion is that he knows laws have been broken, especially by the operators in the FBI who brought all this forward. Unsure, he did mention that he's not going to go after Biden or even Obama at this point. But I tell you, if this is a seminal moment, because they've got the goods, they're already doing the interviews, they're doing the grand jury interviews. We talked to you about this several weeks ago, actually, in May, when we were talking about how you had several John Podesta, who else, Valerie Jarrett, were interviewed. They were the first ones interviewed. They were sequestered from one another, so they couldn't be in the same room, you know, that sort of thing. And of course, it yielded a huge tranche of information about the whole Russiagate thing. It's almost like they've turned against their communist friends, and that begs the thing, right? And so when that happened, Barr and Durham said, wait a minute, we know there's some big stuff going on here. So they went back in the investigation with the information that they had from those two, and now we know that there's a big pandemic, I'm fearing for my life and career flu going on with the Democrats and the FBI and some of your other deep state actors that have surfaced from all this stuff. So this interview that Brett Baer did with Bill Barr was really, I think, a stunning interview, a seminal moment. And we'll be playing some parts of it. I want to get into basically looking to see if Karen Bass is going to wrap it up here in a minute. And we should be hearing some questions of Dan Bongino and other folks that are going to be at this police reform hearing in the U.S. House of Representatives. And Jerry Nadler. Yep, the same Jerry Nadler, the same thing that we have going on with the impeachment is here. He's back. And he's not looking too tall. What, you know, I think he stands 2 feet tall. That's what I think. 2 feet tall. Anyway, that's just me. So, mark my words, getting back to Bill Barr, mark my words, there's going to be indictments in very short order, some very high-profile people. And like I said to Dave Hodges at the beginning of the show, in the first hour, what they have done, they've circled the tree and they've gotten all the low-hanging fruit. And now, right now, they're at mid-level. I think she's wrapping up, and I think we're going to be able to go to the questioning. I'll see where we're going to go with this. Tune back in.
National Intelligence. I now recognize the ranking member of the Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties.
Here we go.
The gentleman from Louisiana, Mr. Johnson, for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to join all my colleagues today in thanking all of our witnesses sincerely for being here, and especially Mr. Floyd and Ms. Underwood Jacobs for making the trip in the midst of such tragedy and difficult circumstances to share your experiences with us. It's very valuable to us, and we're grateful. Of course, you have our condolences and our profound sadness for your losses. And I and my family and the community of faith that I represent have been praying for you and will continue to do that. We're going to talk about policing practices and reforms today, and that's a really important topic. But since this is the first full committee hearing that we've had in judiciary since the tragic death of Mr. Floyd, I think it's also important for us to acknowledge here in the beginning, what's believed by so many to be a root cause of the persistent challenges we face together as a country, and that is the need for authentic reconciliation in our communities. Everyone here understands the plain and simple truth that racism in any form violates the most fundamental principles of our great nation and the rules of our Creator. The central idea of America, let's not forget, is the idea that we boldly declare the self-evident truth that all men are created equal and that they're thus endowed by God with the same inalienable rights. Because each of us is made in the image of God, there are very serious implications that come from that. Among them is the idea that every single person has inestimable dignity and value. And our value is not related in any way to the color of our skin or what zip code we live in or what we can contribute to society or anything else. Our value is inherent because it comes to us by our Creator. Any fool who contends he has some sort of natural right of supremacy over his neighbor violates not only the foundational creed of America, but the greatest commandments of the God who made him. And if we can ever learn to see one another as God does, I think it'll solve a lot of our problems. This unspeakable act of cruelty that America witnessed in Minneapolis has opened an important new dialogue on reform. And while policing has always been regarded as an inherently local function, we do agree that Congress has a key role to play in ensuring that abuses are not tolerated and can never happen again. Justice has to be swift, and bad police officers have to be held accountable for their actions. But at the same time, we want to be careful to recognize, as all my colleagues have this morning, that officers like the ones involved in the death of George Floyd are not representative of the vast majority of America's law enforcement officers. Most are faithful, self-sacrificing public servants who put their lives on the line every single day to protect and serve our communities. We need to honor that, and we need to recognize and empower those law enforcement officers, which is precisely the opposite of the radical, dangerous proposals we're seeing right now to defund them. A government of, by, and for the people must be a nation of law and order, and public safety, of course, is the key to maintaining our republic. Without that, things like the rioting, looting, and violence that has led to the destruction of cities and minority-owned businesses, ironically, would prevail over the valuable, peaceful protests that are intended to bring about meaningful change. There's a consensus among every member of this committee, Democrat and Republican, that there are solutions we can work towards that will restore faith in our institutions and build trust in our communities. From where we sit right now, we believe the most actionable reforms must focus around three core concepts to simplify it: transparency, training, and termination of those rare bad apples in law enforcement who violate the law and the legitimacy that upholds the character of our legal system. This common ground is key if we're going to accomplish the goal of keeping our communities safe, upholding the civil liberties of individuals, and protecting the legitimacy of law enforcement. None of these goals that I've outlined today are mutually exclusive, of course. We can and should clearly condemn the senseless violence we've seen and all causes of it, from a few bad apples wearing a badge to the bad actors and anarchists sparking riots and destruction in our streets. At the same time, we can work together on meaningful reforms and real results while upholding the respect and appreciation that is due to every American patriot who faithfully serves us on the thin blue line. I have faith that we can work together as a committee. This is a bipartisan concern, and we'll have bipartisan solutions, I hope. For the future of our country and for generations of Americans to come, we have to do that. I urge my colleagues in this moment, all of us, to hear and to listen to our witnesses and work with each other as friends and fellow Americans to understand the need in our communities and foster our discussions on a foundation of civility and mutual respect. We've started that, and I hope we can continue it. With that, I yield back.
Thank you. Without objection, all other opening statements will be included in the record. We have an unusually large panel today, but given the broad range of issues that we will be discussing, we have invited a broad range of witnesses. As is customary, the minority was given the opportunity to invite witnesses as well, and they have selected Mr. Bongino, Pastor Scott, and Ms. Underwood Jacobs. We welcome everyone and thank them for their participation. Now, if the witnesses would please rise, I will begin by swearing you in. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that the testimony you're about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge, information, and belief, so help you God? Let the record show that the witnesses answered in the affirmative. Thank you, and please be seated. Please note that each of your written statements will be entered into the record in its entirety. Accordingly, I ask that you summarize your testimony in 5 minutes. To help you stay within that time, For those witnesses testifying in person, there is a timing light on your table. When the light switches from green to yellow, you have 1 minute to conclude your testimony. When the light turns red, it signals your 5 minutes have expired. For our remote participants, there is a timer on your screen to help you keep track of time. Given the large number of witnesses, I will introduce each witness and then invite him or her to give his or her testimony before introducing the next witness. We will begin with Mr. Floyd. Philonise Floyd is the brother of George Floyd, who was killed by Minneapolis police officers on May 25th. Mr. Floyd has spoken eloquently about his brother's life, and we appreciate his being with us today, having flown to Washington to testify before us today directly from his brother's funeral in Houston yesterday. We are all so sorry for your loss. Mr. Floyd, you may begin.
Chairman Gerald Nadler and members of the committee, thank you for the invitation here today to talk about my big brother, George. The world knows him as George, but I called him Perry. Yesterday, we laid him to rest. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do. I'm the big brother now, so it's my job to comfort my brothers and my sisters, Perry's kids, and everyone who loved him. And that's a lot of people. I have to be the strong one now because George is gone. And me being the big brother now is why I'm here today, to do what Perry always would have done, to take care of the family and others. I couldn't take care of George that day he was killed, but maybe by speaking with you today, I can make sure that his death would not be in vain. To make sure that he is more than another face on a T-shirt, more than another name on a list that won't stop growing. George always made sacrifices for our family, and he made sacrifices for complete strangers. He gave the little that he had to help others. He was our gentle giant. I was reminded of that when I watched the video of his murder. He called all the officers, sir. He was mild-mannered. He didn't fight back. He listened to all the officers. The man who took his life, who suffocated him for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, he still called them, sir, as he begged for his life. I can't tell you the kind of pain you feel when you watch something like that. When you watch your big brother, who you looked up to your whole entire life, die begging for his mom. I'm tired of pain. Pain you feel when you watch something like that. When you watch your big brother, who you looked up to for your whole life, die begging for his mom. I'm here to ask you to make it stop. Stop the pain. Stop us from being tired. George called for help, and he was ignored. Please listen to the call I'm making to you now, to the calls of our family and the calls ringing out the streets across the world. People of all backgrounds, genders, and races have come together to demand change. Honor them. Honor George and make the necessary changes that make law enforcement the solution and not the problem. Hold them accountable when they do something wrong. Teach them what it means to treat people with empathy and respect. Teach them what necessary force is. Teach them that deadly force should be used rarely and only when life is at risk. George wasn't hurting anyone that day. He didn't deserve to die over $20. I'm asking you, is that what a black man is worth? $20? This is 2020. Enough is enough. The people marching in the streets are telling you enough is enough. By the leaders that our country, the world needs the right thing. The people elected you to speak for them, to make positive change. George's name means something. You have the opportunity here today to make your names mean something too. If his death ends up changing the world for the better, and I think it will, then he died as he lived. It is on you to make sure his death is not in vain. I didn't get the chance to say goodbye to Perry while he was here. I was robbed of that. But I know he's looking down at us now. Perry, look up at what you did. Big brother, you changed the world. Thank you for everything. For taking care of us on earth. For taking care of us now. I hope you found mama and you can rest in peace with power. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Floyd. Vanita Gupta is the president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Ms. Gupta previously served as acting assistant attorney general at the Department of Justice and led the department's civil rights division. She received her JD from New York University School of Law and her BA from Yale University. Ms. Gupta, you may begin.
Thank you, Chairman Nadler. Mr. Floyd, thank you for being here today and for those incredibly powerful words, and we are so sorry. Chairman Nadler, Ranking Member Collins, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. And thank you, Chairman Nadler, for calling this hearing on policing practices and the need for transformative policies that promote accountability, begin to reimagine public safety, and respect the dignity of all people. While the recent murder of George Floyd at the hands of four Minneapolis police officers put the issue of police brutality in the national spotlight, the outpouring of pain and anger is anything but a reaction to one isolated incident or the misconduct of a few bad apples. Instead, the outcry is a response to the long cycle of stolen lives and violence with impunity toward Black people in our nation. We are now at a turning point. There is no returning to normal. We have to create a new way forward, one that does more than tinker at the edges, that promotes data and training. We need something that truly transforms policing and leads to more accountability for communities. It is imperative that we get this right, and that Congress's response in this moment appropriately reflects and acknowledges the important work of Black Lives Matter, the movement for Black Lives, and so many people that are bringing us to this tipping point. My tenure as head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division began 2 months after 18-year-old Michael Brown was killed by a police officer in Ferguson. The Justice Department was hardly perfect, but we understood our mandate to promote accountability and constitutional policing in order to build community trust. During the Obama administration, we opened 25 pattern or practice investigations to help realize greater structural and community-centered change, often at the request of police chiefs and mayors who needed federal leadership. After making findings, we negotiated consent decrees with extensive engagement and input from community advocates who not only identified unjust and unlawful policing practices, but also helped develop sustainable mechanisms for accountability and systemic change. That is not the Justice Department that we have today. Under both Attorneys General Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr, the department has abdicated its responsibility and abandoned the use of tools like pattern practice investigations and consent decrees. Instead, it is focused on dismantling police accountability efforts and halting any new investigations. The disruption of crucial work in the Civil Rights Division and throughout the Department of Justice to bring forth accountability and transparency in policing is deeply concerning. In the absence of federal leadership, the Leadership Conference Education Fund launched the New Era of Public Safety Initiative, a comprehensive guide and toolkit outlining proposals to build trust between communities and police departments, restore confidence, and imagine a new paradigm of public safety. While much of these changes must happen at the state and local level, success is going to require the leadership, support, and commitment of the federal government, including Congress. Last week, the Leadership Conference and more than 400 civil rights organizations sent a letter to Congress to move us forward on a path of true accountability. The The recommendations included the following. One, create a national necessary standard on the use of force. Two, prohibit racial profiling, including robust data collection. Three, ban the use of chokeholds and other restraint maneuvers. Four, end the militarization of policing. Five, prohibit the use of no-knock warrants, especially in drug cases. Six, strengthen federal accountability systems and increase the Justice Department's authority to prosecute officers that engage in misconduct. Seven, create a national police misconduct registry. And eight, end qualified immunity. The leadership conference was pleased to learn that the Justice and Policing Act introduced Monday by both members of the House of Representatives and the Senate reflects much of this accountability framework. This is Congress's most comprehensive effort in decades to substantially address police misconduct by taking on issues, critical issues affecting Black and Brown communities. And as the bill advances toward passage, we will continue to work on it and to ensure that real change is achieved. But let me just say in closing that policing reform alone is not going to solve the crisis that we're in today. This moment of reckoning requires leaders, together with communities, to envision a new paradigm of public safety that respects the human rights of all people. That means not just changing policing practices and culture, but ultimately shrinking the footprint of the criminal legal system in Black and Brown people's lives. And it means shifting our approach to public safety from exclusively focusing on criminalization and policing towards investments in economic opportunity, education, healthcare, and other public benefits. Police chiefs and officers talk about the same thing. This approach will not only further equity, but also constitute effective policy. When we stop using criminal justice policy as social policy, we will make communities safer and more prosperous. Now is the time for Congress to pass lasting accountability measures, and we look forward to working with you until the day that these reforms are signed into law. George Floyd's death has impacted the world, and now it is on us to change it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Without objection, at the request of the ranking member, I will now recognize the distinguished minority leader of the House for a brief introduction of his constituent, our next witness, Angela Underwood Jacobs.
Thank you, Chairman Nadler and Ranking Member Jordan, for convening this very important hearing. Mr. Floyd, thank you for your powerful words. I'll make one promise to you. Your brother will not have died in vain. I'm here to introduce Angela Underwood Jacobs, her husband Michael, and her daughter Trinity. More importantly, I'm here to listen to them and all of you. Now, I know Angela, and I'm proud to call her a friend. She is a mother, a businesswoman, and the first Black woman to become a city council member in Lancaster, California. Angela is here to testify because her brother, Dave Patrick Underwood, he was tragically and senselessly murdered in the line of duty 2 weeks ago in Oakland. We mourn and pray for Angela and the entire Underwood and Floyd family. As a member of the Federal Protective Service, Pat was guarding a federal courthouse, a symbol of equal justice and the rule of law, during the riots in Oakland on the night of his death. It appears his death was part of a targeted attack on federal law enforcement. We pray that justice comes swiftly and completely for Pat, for George Floyd, and all victims of violence. Pat Underwood should be alive today. George Floyd should be alive today. David Dern should be alive today. And so should countless others. And though we cannot bring them back, we can learn from their lives and deliver the justice and change they deserve. We pray for Angela and the entire Underwood and Floyd family. As a member of the Federal Protective Service, Pat was guarding a federal courthouse, a symbol of equal justice and the rule of law, during the riots in Oakland on the night of his death. It appears his death was part of a targeted attack on federal law enforcement. We pray that justice comes swiftly and completely for Pat, for George Floyd, and all victims of violence. Pat Underwood should be alive today. George Floyd should be alive today. David Dern should be alive today. and so should countless others. And though we cannot bring them back, we can learn from their lives and deliver the justice and change they deserve.
Opportunity to be here today. As a nation, as a people, we must come together to defeat fear, hate, prejudice, and violence. I want to ensure the memory of my brother, Patrick, is as a catalyst against injustice, intolerance, and violence of any kind. I want to honor my brother, Dave Patrick Underwood, and our family, and help our nation think about how to navigate the righteous path to equality, freedom, and nonviolent systemic change. I want to extend my sympathies and condolences to George Floyd's family. Mr. Floyd's murder was just not cruel and reprehensible, but criminal. The officers involved should be brought to justice and held accountable for their actions or as well as their inaction. I wish that same justice for my brother Patrick, who served with distinction and honor as a federal officer for the Department of Homeland Security until he was murdered anonymously by blind violence on the steps of the federal courthouse in Oakland, California. As he took his last breath on the cold, hard cement after being shot multiple times, he died. Fear, hatred, ignorance, and blind violence snatched the life of my brother Patrick from all of us. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preached, "Always avoid violence. If you succumb to the temptation of using violence in your struggle, unborn generations will be recipients of a long and desolate night of bitterness. And your chief legacy to the future will be an endless reign of meaningless chaos." I have spoken to many people across this country, in fact, across the world, regarding what is going on in America. America is in pain, and she is crying. Can you hear her? I am here to seek justice through the chaos for my brother Patrick, for George Floyd, for citizens of all colors, for communities across America, and for the police officers that protect those communities and their citizens every day. The actions of a few are dividing us as a nation. At a time when we should be coming together and uniting for the well-being of all people, we will never solve generational systemic injustice with looting, burning, destruction of property, and killing in the name of justice. We must find lawful, peaceful solutions that uplift and benefit everyone. And this is greater than a black, white, or blue issue. It is a humanity issue. When those in a position of authority choose to abuse their power, that is the very definition of oppression. And when innocent people are harmed in the name of justice, no one prevails, we all lose. Everyone deserves the opportunity to feel heard, be seen, and feel safe. Police brutality of any kind must not be condoned. However, it is blatantly wrong to create an excuse of out of discrimination and disparity to loot and burn our communities, to kill our officers of the law. It is a ridiculous solution to proclaim that defunding police departments is a solution to police brutality and discrimination, because it's not a solution. It gets us nowhere as a nation and removes the safety net of protection that every citizen deserves from their community's elected officials. There is a path to achieving what we desire and deserve as a nation and as a people: equality, fairness, justice, peace, and freedom from oppression. It is the same path we started on during the Civil Rights Movement. The solution to our nation's ills are straightforward. Education. We need to actually invest in education again and make it our nation's top priority. Through education comes knowledge, Through knowledge comes understanding, and through understanding comes opportunity and freedom. Jobs, because it's not a solution. It gets us nowhere as a nation and removes the safety net of protection that every citizen deserves from their community's elected officials. There is a path to achieving what we desire and deserve as a nation and as a people. Equality, fairness, justice, peace, and freedom from oppression. It is the same path we started on during the Civil Rights Movement. The solution to our nation's ills are straightforward. Education. We need to actually invest in education again and make it our nation's top priority. Through education comes knowledge, through knowledge comes understanding, and through understanding comes opportunity and freedom. Jobs. If there isn't any chance of making a decent living, there isn't any chance of having a decent, just society. We need to create more jobs that in turn will create more economic justice for all Americans. Housing. There is no way to live a decent life if you can't find, or in America's case, afford shelter. We need to listen and learn from each other. It's time for everyone to open their ears and listen to what each other has to say. America is the world's melting pot because we have so many people, cultures, beliefs, and points of view. And somehow we've become siloed. As a single voice in this chambers, attempting to honor my brother and family, I hope I can make a difference today. I want America to make a change. I want you, as our representatives in Congress, to make a change so that no one ever has to wake up to the phone call that I received telling me that my brother was shot dead and murdered. How my brother died was wrong, and I'm praying that we learn something about how he lived. Patrick was a type of man that when our mother fell to the ground as she was dying, he picked her lifeless body up as her spirit was leaving to place her upon her bed because that's where she wanted to die. My question is, who will pick up Patrick and carry his legacy? I believe this is a responsibility for all of us. Please do not let my brother Patrick's name go in vain. Patrick was a good man who only wanted to help others and keep his community safe. He had an infectious laugh and a corny sense of humor. He would go out of his way to help family, friends, and strangers. He did not deserve to die in such a horrendously inhumane way. No one does. Now, my family is in a state of hollow disarray. We all feel the anxiety of wondering what tomorrow may bring or may not bring, which has struck fear in our hearts. Nevertheless, I wholeheartedly urge us all Americans, not to give in to hate and anger, but to resolve conflict with kindness and love, to lead with a sense of purpose and renewed energy to create positive change, as I have outlined here through education, jobs, housing, and listening. Pat didn't tell anyone how to live, but he lived. And what an amazing life it was. I will never forget the way my brother smiled and the way that he loved his family with every piece of his heart. My wish is for us to live and live without fear and discrimination. Do not simply tolerate your neighbor, but strive to understand one another. And we will be a better, more just society for all. Thank you.
Well, that was some incredible witness going on there. We'll talk about this in the next hour. Coming up next, though, well, be with us.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.